Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
My Dad Was a Wheelman for the Mob, Part 2. I sat Dad down and decided to record the stories he was telling to better transcribe them. And because even I was getting tired of my dad. In fact, when I am referring to him, I'll just call him Senior. The following was recorded after I got him a little tipsy and begged him to talk more about his life. He was hesitant at first, but finally broke down and admitted he was happy to get some of it off of his chest. Where did we cap off last time? Alright, John the Schmuck. Yeah, they never found that poor bastard. Old man Maroney was beside himself with grief. He always thought John had been taken out by a rival of his from across the river. Of course, he could never prove it. That didn't stop him, though. He was on a warpath, itching for blood. Truth be told, I think he was just glad for the excuse. One day, he pulls me aside and he says, "Frank, I need you to drive some friends of ours uptown. They need to make a payment up there." This would be the first hit I would ever be a part of, officially anyways. I don't count the carpet debacle as anything but. Was I nervous? Hell yeah. Riding with me was Ricky Toro and Dex Finnegan. Ricky was made young, a somewhat controversial topic actually, and he had brought his childhood buddy to the top with him. Ricky was a top earner. Some scheme or scam always rolling around in that thick skull of his. With his pal Mutt Dex on his side, he could back up any swindle and come out on top. His big moneymaker was fixing fights, so it was a shock when I found out he had volunteered for the hit. My guess was that he was tired of the whispers, how he had never really stepped up for the family, yet they opened the books for him. I could see him in the rearview. On the surface, he looked calm and collected. But on the fidgety knee going a mile a minute told a different story. Dex, though, he seemed bored with it. I don't know a lot about the guy. Kept to himself, only really hung around Ricky and his crew. He was a tall golem with a mop of fiery red on his head. I know that much. The mood before we crossed the river was jovial, like soldiers given their first marching orders. It was weird. The second we hit Manhattan, you could feel the mood wither and die. It was real all of a sudden. My old man had pulled me aside before we left. There was a hint of pride hidden behind that stony face. He tucked something away in my coat, ignoring my protest. "Just in case," he kept saying. He was a careful man, Vincenzo. I'll always grant him for that. Finally, we pull up to our target. It was quiet, though not unusually so. It was Sunday after all, and most of the neighborhood were a few blocks away paying their dues. The barber shop had tinted windows, but we could peer in and see the shadows of the unsuspecting mooks inside. We could make out at least 6 or 7 human-shaped blobs bobbing around in there, the biggest sitting down, getting attended to by a slim shadow with slicked back hair. Now, I don't know about Ricky and his bloodhound. but I pretty much shat a brick when I saw an oval-shaped bastard sitting in there. Old Man Maroney had scuffed the intel a bit. Inside wasn't just Carissi's right hand, but Benito Carissi himself. I realize all these names are lost on you, frankly, way before your time. I sound like a cranky old mule when I say, back in my day, but, well, back in my day, the Carissi crew were the biggest scumbags across the river. They owned their little patch of land and fought tooth and nail to preserve it. Benito was a miserable fat bastard, his guts spilling out of his button-down. His breath reeked of weak old tuna, and when he smiled, you could see the toll years of decay had taken on his snaggled and jagged teeth. He was a vindictive son of a bitch, and he wasn't supposed to be there that day, or so we were told. We sat in fearful silence for a moment, each man weighing their options. Finally, Ricky pulled out his Glock 90 and slapped Dex on the back. Let's teach these sons of pricks a lesson they'll never forget. Frankie, I don't care if God comes to you. Do not move this car till we come back. His accent was heavy and hardened, determined to prove himself to the family. Dex nodded his head at me, saying nothing as he headed out. I kept the engine running, my foot nervously tapping the gas. I reached for my jacket pocket, reassuring myself it wouldn't be needed. I watched as Dex and Ricky positioned themselves, an unspoken maneuver between the duo. Ricky leered in front of the window, pump action firmly planted in his hands. Ricky readied himself by the door out of sight. The denizens inside completely unaware of the carnage about to unfold. There was a nod between them, and Ricky pushed open the glass door. Heads turned as the overheard bell rang out, and before they knew it, the tinted windows exploded inwards, raining down shrapnel and buckshot. Ricky stayed halfway by the door, spraying and praying as he blasted inside. I could see the look on his face as he could barely hold on to his Glock, wild-eyed and cold at the same time. The Carissi crew went down, and they went down hard. I could see Benito crawling on the floor over one of his fallen men. He was wearing a blood-stained track coat and blue overalls. Three of his men had gone down in the first volley, two more blindly returning fire from behind makeshift cover. Shards of glass-stained blood littered the inside as shell casings dropped to the ceramic floor of the shop. I kept my head down at first, not trying to catch a stray. I heard Dex cry out and stagger back, catching one in the shoulder. Ricky saw this and swore out, hitting the attacker dead in the head. I saw it all from the Vega, the first time I had ever seen a man die. His head snapped back on impact, blood splattering against the wall. He collapsed in a heap onto the ground like a pile of dirty laundry. It was instant, like someone had just flipped his switch and he was gone. Senior snaps his fingers. Like that. Dex retreated to the Vega, wincing as he studied his wound. Wasn't bad, but I could tell it hurt like hell. Ricky ran back to the car, providing covering fire, which was really just him shooting up the storefront. He hit everything but the final man and Benito, who was getting up and staring us down from the inside. I could see that snaggle-toothed puss snarling at us like a rabid animal. He grabbed a pair of scissors from the ground and hurled it at Ricky. It soared through the air. I swear to Christ, Frankie, and it hit Ricky right in the chest. He cried out and dropped his gun, clenching himself. Benito charged out the door with a roar, grabbing him by the collar and slamming him onto the hood of the Vega. The whole car shook and groaned as Benito began pummeling him with his fists. I sprang into action, getting out the revolver my old man had tucked away for me. I felt like Dirty Harry waving that thing around. The final shooter inside took aim at me, and by sheer luck, he missed. I took aim at the kid and fired away, the gun nearly jumping out of my hand, the recoil pushing me instantly. I must have hit him because he cried out in agony and disappeared from view. Now it was just me and the ogre beating Ricky to death. I jumped out of the car, adrenaline pumping through my veins like steroids, and aimed down the hulking mass. Benito was so focused, tearing away at poor Ricky's face. Ricky's face had already ballooned up into fracturing lumps of bruises and welts, like he was a pile of red clay Benito was working tirelessly to reform and disfigure.
"You dumb fox, come here! I'll have your whole family strung up and skinned for this!"
Benito raved at the top of his lungs.
"I'll send you back to the Moroni in pieces! I'll march down to Jersey and raise the whole frickin' state down!"
I don't know if he was talking to me, Ricky, or God, but he was too far gone in his lunacy to notice me. So, I unloaded on him, 5 shots right into his side. Smoke poured out of every hole, and for a moment, he seemed to tank every shot. He stopped in his final assault, breathing ragged and choked. He slumped down onto the ground, fists clenched at his side. He took one look at me as he dragged himself across the pavement, eyes burning with hatred. My eyes flicked to Ricky, barely conscious on the human-shaped dent on the hood. He was wheezing and coughing up some crimson fluid, so I slumped him over my shoulder and threw him in next to Dex, still struggling with his shoulder, blood still flowing no matter how much pressure he applied. I scrambled to the driver's seat, sirens starting to wail in the air towards this massacre. I peeled out, burning rubber as I left Benito to bleed out on the sidewalk, hoping to cross the river before the streets flooded with cops. Senior takes a long pause and a swig from his drink. I was too stunned to speak at first. I stuttered at first, struggling to find the words.
"I thought you were just a driver."
I was, at first. Over time, that role grew, and before I knew it, I was running my own little crew. It changed that day, that first hit. I managed to give the cops and slip and head back into friendly waters. Got Ricky some help as soon as I could, dumped the poor prick in front of an urgent care, and reported back to old man Moroni with Dex. He was pretty pleased with himself, Benito's favorite hangout in shambles and 5 of his men dead. Total embarrassment, and he just had to sit there and take it. Back up. I thought he was dead. Benito? Nah, all that blubber, it was like a perfect insulation to take 5 slugs in the side. His boys whisked him off before the cops came, got him patched up. Dex came out of it with the pain in his arm every time he moved it, but Ricky? He had to have major reconstructive surgery. He came out of it with a scarred up face and an eye welded shut, and he wore that mug like a badge of honor. No one said shit behind his back anymore, and he nicknamed himself Prince Charming, some kind of ironic joke, I'm sure. For my part in it, I was praised for keeping a cool head and getting them back safe. I returned the revolver to my father without a word, and he never mentioned how it was empty. He simply patted me on the back and said to keep up the good work. I didn't respond. It was finally hitting me what had gone down that day. How there was 5 confirmed dead, at least one of those souls following me to this day. I would later find out my old man knew what would happen. It was why he gave me the peace. The night before, he had gone to his longtime Komori, a learned woman from the old country. Her name was Anastasia, and she claimed to know things before they transpired. Call it tarot, call it black magic, call it whatever you wanted. The truth of the matter was this raven-curled beauty had my father coiled around her finger, She would whisper prophecy in his ears in bed, and my father would bark orders on her whim. You believe stuff like that? I laughed, but Senior got a dead serious look on his face. Let me tell you, Frankie, I saw some strange crap over the years. My old man was a believer for sure, but Polly was really superstitious. One time I'm driving him on a collections run. We stop in front of the grocery store. Nice sunny day, heat bearing down on us like nobody's business. Polly was wearing a wife beater. I only bring that up because he looked ridiculous in it, just absolutely drenched in sweat. Supposed to be the last stop of the day, he barely gets out and takes a long look at the roof. Then he climbs back in, tells me to drive on. I asked him what the hell, because this place was already short 2 weeks in a row. Polly points up to the roof, and perched on it was a black crow. Largest bird I had ever seen, just basking in the heat. It looked down at us. The Vega must have looked like a giant ruby to it. And I go, so what, a frickin' bird? Which earns me one of Polly's smacks across the head. Don't be fresh. Them things are harbingers. We'll come back another day, he said firmly. Well, I knew better than not to argue with him, so we went on. Not 5 minutes later, we see two patrol cars barreling down past us. Turns out the joint was being robbed. He never left his brownstone on the 13th of any month. He carried salt in his back pocket to throw past him if he walked by a graveyard. He skeeved black cats and birds, went to church every Sunday, 8 a.m. on the dot. I don't know if he was simply OCD or what. I tell you this much, he never balked at any order he knew came from the mouth of the prophet. There was this one time I was hanging out with my buddy Carlo down at Cindy's. Cindy's was a bit of a dive, but it was our dive. Sid, the pony-haired blonde who tended the bar, was eyeing me from across the bar, a saucy look to her emerald eyes. Carlo was egging me on until Polly emerged behind me from the back, a cock-blocking ape who reeked of cigars. He tapped me on the back, robbing me of my breath and suave attitude.
Come on, Romeo, we gotta take a ride.
I heard him speak low enough just for the two of us. Carlo snickered and took a swig, drawing the wrath of Polly.
You too, Mercutio.
We drove with the windows down that night, the springtime Jersey air doing wonders for our lungs. Polly explained on the way, one of Vincenzo's accountants had up and vanished. Been about 2 weeks since he had last kicked up, and the wall was starting to crack a little. His Khmer had told him Lawrence had been communing with someone he shouldn't. The old man took that to mean he was collaborating, though that didn't explain the disappearing act. It was pitch black when we had arrived at the little slice of suburbia that Larry called home. Even in the evening, the scent of freshly cut grass wafted in the air. In the distance, a dog barked to the cheering applause of crickets. The lights were all on, an oddly unsettling sight this time of night. We jogged up the driveway, eyes darting back and forth like we were bandits in the night. Which, hey, I guess we were. We went around back, porch light buzzing above us. Polly had his piece drawn, and I was carrying as well. Carlo liked to carry around this butterfly knife he found in a Chinatown back lot. He claimed he could do all sorts of tricks with it, but I never saw him try it. But I digress. For some reason, none of us thought it prudent just to knock on the door or even call out to Larry. I had this gut feeling that we shouldn't be there, and I could tell by the strained look in Polly's eyes he thought the same.
Finally, Carlo said, fudge it,
and leaned towards the back door, pounding on it like a madman in heat.
Larry boy, open up, we're friends of the old man.
He called out to nothing and was met with such. The dead silence from inside was starting to get unnerving. Polly was giving me the, "We should get the F out of here," side eye. Carlo knocked on the door once more, only for it to slowly swing open, a light breeze chilling the air in front of us. The door swung open, the naked back hall beckoning us. It was at this time I took my piece out as well. Polly had put his hands in the air and started to walk back up the drive. "You gonna tell the old man you walked away?" I shouted at him. Polly paused in his tracks.
"Son of a bitch,"
he grumbled, shoulder checking me as he entered the dragon. He turned back and saw us gawking at him, a hint of the devil on Carlo's and I's faces.
"Come on, you cocksuckers, let's go,"
he bellowed, and we scurried behind him like rats leaving a sinking ship. Larry's home was, I guess, cozy was the way to put it. There was a lingering smell of rot wafting from the kitchen, but other than that was homey. The walls were adorned with old family photos, glimpsing into the past of our missing comrade. There was a decent-sized cube of a TV sitting in the corner. Through the frayed and grainy image, I think I could make out replays of last week's Giants game. A leather-bound recliner sat right up in front of it. Next to it, a diner tray with a warm beer on it. I took a whiff and gagged. Smelled like dried-out skunk piss.
"Oh, come here a second,"
I heard Carlo holler from the kitchen. I was met with both him and Polly standing around a dining room table. It was filled with rotting food, flies buzzing around set plates with half-eaten homemade cooking that devolved into colorful slop. It stunk to high heaven. Polly was stepping back with his shoulder to his face to keep from dry heaving. Carlo was leaning over it all, hands rubbing his chin like he was goddamn Sherlock Holmes. Finally, he came next to me to share his observations.
"I think whoever it was left in a hurry,"
he mused out loud. I swear to you, Polly rose over the air and flew over just to smack him on the back of the head because I blinked and suddenly Carlo was going,
"Ouch!"
and rubbing his scalp.
"Frickin' stun ad,"
Polly grumbled, a hint of dry vomit on his breath. "Three plates out, he must have had company. He had no wife or kids," I countered. Polly begrudged me that one.
"Wife died giving birth a few years back. Kid only lasted a couple of hours after that. Breach, tragic shit,"
he pondered aloud. There was a hint of empathy in his voice, but only enough to give the illusion of caring. There was a cup of sour milk at the end of the table, looked like old tapioca. Carlo leaned over and sniffed it, again thinking he was some great detective. Ignoring him, I turned to Polly, who was deep in pondering. "This has got to be retaliation for something, right?" I whispered harshly to him, my mind flashing back to the carpet fiasco. Polly shook his head.
"Larry wasn't heavy with anyone. Well-liked, kept to himself. Even if it was a message, we would have received it by now,"
he remarked under his breath. Carlo came up behind me, probably about to say something that would make Polly throttle him when he heard it. Thump. The three of us looked up at the ceiling in unison, like it was some macabre Stooges bit. I thought it was a one-off at first, but the wind had knocked over a vase or something. That was when we heard the pitter-patter of feet scurrying around up there, sounding like a wild animal was crawling around. Polly held his gun like a security blanket as he gave the ceiling a dead stare. Carlo was cautiously making his way to the stairs. The only sound was the fuzz of the ancient TV plane as we tiptoed through the living room. I peeked up the stairs. A soft, thumping noise echoed down them. It was like it was taunting us, daring us to come and see. Carlo looked past me, a cocky look on his face. He had brought his knife out. He looked like a greaser displaced in time. He brushed past me, planting himself on the first step.
"Larry, is that you up there?"
he called up, his voice booming in the small case. Polly pushed him, steam powering out of every orifice on his head.
Are your parents fifth-generation inbreds? You ever heard of an element of surprise?
Polly groaned.
Oh, like they didn't hear us stomping in here?
Carlo complained, brushing Polly's hands off him.
Your fat ass couldn't sneak up on a deaf nun.
I got in between them before they tore into each other, putting a finger to my lips and giving them both the death glare. They put aside their idiocy for a moment, coming together to find whatever was stalking the second floor. We crept up, weapons drawn, our senses sharp as daggers. There was a rank smell up there, different than the rot. This was a musk of some kind. Strong and willful, the rancid stench of a sulfur miner coming off a 20-hour shift. We put up our noses as we studied the upstairs. Two halls, a crossroad in the middle leading further. To the right, a bathroom, nothing special. To the left, an old bedroom, set up like some kind of nursery. My heart ached seeing that. Larry Boy never got over it. Down the middle, the stench grew stronger, drawing us in. Naturally, we followed the smell, unsure of what we would find at the end. Two doors on either side, windows smack dab in the middle. Both doors were closed, but we could hear movement, loud and scattered. It was impossible to tell which room held our mystery. Polly flicked me in the chest with the butt of his gun.
I'll go right in, you shark bait over there, take left,
he commanded in a hushed voice. Carlo was about to pipe in, but I jabbed him with my shoulder, following Polly's lead. I put my ear to the door on the left, and I swear I could hear hushed whispers. I couldn't make out what they were saying, but the voice sounded like it was gargling rocks in spite. I gave Carlo the nod, and we bursted through the door and aimed my piece at nothing. The room was empty. We were met with an unkept queen-sized bed and a hardwood floor filled with dirty laundry. A couple pictures hung on the wall-esque, like the room had been met with a localized earthquake. We went in on high alert, still not sure if we were alone. Carlo went over to the closet and tore it open, jabbing his knife in and out like a nutjob. After he was done stabbing Larry's nice suits, he gave me a shrug. That was when I noticed Polly was being awfully quiet. I looked over to see him clutching the doorway with one hand, repeatedly making a sign of the cross with the other. His face was crunched up and contorted in horror, like he had seen the gates of hell open up personally. He was muttering something under his breath, but I couldn't make it out. My guess, it was some variation of the Hail Mary with his own personal flavor added in. I approached slowly, touching his shoulder. As soon as my hand touched him, he twirled around and shoved his gun in my face. I didn't even blink at first, but I think I did piss myself a tad. He lowered it almost instantly, a look of fear glazing over him, his breath shaky and pained.
Frankie, he choked out. We need to get the F out of here right now.
He sounded horrified. He pointed to the room and then booked it down the hall, not even waiting for us. Carlo joined me at the threshold and we peered in. It was Larry's study, his desk overturned and crammed against the lime green walls. Paper littered the walls and floor, scribbled with some unknown language or simply Larry's sloppy handwriting. Engraved, carved in fact, in the middle of the floor was a circle adorned with strange symbols. In the middle of the circle was a nine-pointed star and a barrier of salt surrounding the whole thing. Melted candles were glued to the points, the remnants of some godforsaken ritual Larry had done. The air inside that room felt wrong. A chilling breeze greeted us from nowhere, the hairs on the back of my neck flashing warning signs. I couldn't help but notice the salt line on the carving was broken, salt bursting outward and glistening on the floor. I almost socked Carlo in the jaw. He startled me so badly, whispering right in my ear.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph,
he muttered next to me. What kind of sick shit is this guy into? Before I could reply, we heard a thunderous crash from downstairs, followed by Polly screeching,
Mother frickin' Christ!
And the blast of his pistol. We raced downstairs, calling out for Polly. We were halfway when we saw Polly standing in the middle of the living room, panting and waving his gun wildly. A shattered chair lay next to him. He saw us standing there like idiots, his eyes wide and crazed. He pointed his gun at the kitchen as he yelled his explanation.
It threw a frickin' chair at me! It laughed and said my name and everything!
He rambled. We approached him with open arms, but come on, huh? I was gonna try to calm him down when a plate whizzed past my head and shattered into pieces. The rotted slop it had held fell to the shag carpet. I faced the kitchen, seeing nothing there but now a half-empty table. There was a gurgling sound, a sort of dark clucking, like whoever had done it was mocking us. Well, Polly had enough of that, and raced out the back door with us nipping at his heel. He covered us as we ran out the back, though I don't know what he could have done. We caught our breath in the drive, hearts racing a mile a minute. Polly was keeping busy, rummaging around back and eventually coming out with a half-empty gas canister and a dirty rag. He forced it in her hands, ordering us to stuff it and light it. He searched his pockets and came out with a metal lighter. I dumped a little gas on the house as Carlo doused and lit the rag. Before long, flames were quickly devouring the back porch, and we were retreating back to the car. Polly was already there, watching the place quickly become engulfed in flames. The heat was intense. We could feel it all the way from the end of the street. The house made a groaning sound like a wounded deer. At least I hope it was the house. From the street, we could see the upstairs window, and I swear to you, Junior, I saw a figure standing there, highlighted by the raging fire. A dark shadow with eyes like dancing embers. I knew it wasn't my mind playing tricks on me because I could feel the thing reaching out to me, trying to tell me something. What it wanted, I couldn't tell you. It just felt like evil clawing at my mind. None of us said a word on the drive back. Polly didn't leave his house for 2 weeks after that. When I finally did coax him out, he looked so shaken and dopey-eyed, like he hadn't slept since that night. Eventually, he reverted back to his old jovial self, but he refused to comment on that night. Carlo and I just stuffed it all to the back of our minds, making jokes about that haunted house we saw one time. The implications of all that never really hit us. I didn't want it to. The fire ended up reducing the house to cinders, taking any evidence of Larry and his whereabouts with it. My father was furious when he heard what had happened.
How do you screw up a simple welfare check, huh? If I send you idiots to pick up a pie, you gotta shoot poor old Luigi and rob him?
He screamed at us from his office. Me and Carlo just stood there, embarrassed to even explain what we had seen. Anastasia stood by my father's side, her mystic emeralds watching us. She wore this flowing crimson dress. I think they were gonna make it to some party after my father was done chewing us out. She leaned down as he was catching a breath, whispering something secret only for him. My father had a strange look then, like he had been caught with his hands in a cookie jar. He faced away from us, a deep sigh rumbling from him as Anastasia curled around his shoulders.
You boys had a rough night. Nothing we could do for Larry in the end. I suppose you did what you thought was best. Get out of here. Give Polly my regards.
And that was the end of that. I never did find out what Anna had said to him, but I suppose that's none of my business. Senior takes a long pause, not even drinking. I cough to regain his attention, and he eyes me, sorrow creeping on his face. I remember the first time I met Anna. Vincenzo and Ma had an unspoken agreement. He would never bring business home, and she would turn a blind eye to flaunting his girlfriend. He would take her to lavish parties. He would bury her in jewelry and romance, while doing the bare minimum for Ma, the sweetest woman in the world. I began to resent all of them, frankly. Him for doing it, and her for letting it happen. It had been a few weeks of collection pickups. I had just gotten the Vega, actually. The old man thought it was gaudy, but screw him. He wasn't slugging around town for his cronies. One night, he tells me I'm gonna drive him to dinner. My heart drops. It's Saturday night. Her night. In front of Ma, he tells me this, like he's enjoying twisting the knife. I swallow my pride and go, "Sure, Pop, whatever you say." He has me dressed in a nice suit. He's in this old-time black-and-white two-piece. It's like he stepped right out of a photo with Capone. He sits in the back and tells me the address. He's silent pretty much the whole time, save for one moment when he tells me to slow down, this ain't the Kentucky Derby. I pocket that comment to bitch about later and pull up in front of Anastasia's place. It's an apartment building, old by the looks of it. There's a goofy-looking ad by the door for Madame Anna, with a picture of a gypsy caressing a crystal ball. Corny shit. And since the old man was ancient even then, I expected some dolled-up call girl with a hiked-up dress and a fox turban to stroll out of that building. Imagine the donkey-faced look I had when out strolled Helena Troy. She couldn't have been much older than me, late 20s, early 30s. She wore a long, flowy blouse that left little to imagine. My father flicked the back of my neck, gesturing to open the door for her. I scrambled to open the passenger door for her, and her hand touched mine as Aphrodite slid next to the prune. She flashed me a smile, her eyes locked on mine as she did. I thought nothing of it at the time. I tried to focus on the road as I drove them to Bella's. This gourmet place the old man was in the middle of busting out as they cozied up in the back seat. It was revolting to even think about, much less sit 3 inches away from. Finally, we made it to the joint. If you've seen one Italian joint, you've seen them all, and I got out to open the door for them. Vincenzo patted me on the back as he passed, barely looking at me in the eye as he whispered, "Drive around the block for an hour or so." Anna raised her eyebrows, pouting as she replied, "I was hoping that the young gentleman would accompany us tonight." Her accent was thick, like she had just stepped off the boat. Vincenzo looked at me, grinding his teeth and already regretting dragging me along. "Sounds like a nice time." The inside was crawling with the who's who's of Jersey scumbags that night. We were tucked away in a private booth, but every few minutes it seemed like a half-drunken gooba was coming back to pay their respects. There was Polly, of course. He never missed an opportunity to grovel. There was old man Maroney, held up by two cronies forcing a smile as their boss babbled like a drunken idiot. Prince Charming was there, preface lift, of course. There was Nikki Valent, a few guys from New York, Benny Barino, Louis Stacks, even the Irish from across the bay were coming over to kiss his ass, and my father frickin' hated the mix. He would make a big show of showing Anna off like she was cut of prized veil or something. Made my stomach churn, and from the look in her emeralds, she felt the same. Eventually, things settled down and we put in our orders. Anna leaned in eager to learn all about me. How was I liking my new gig? What I'd study? What was Vinny like growing up? I swore I saw him blush at that question. I tried to be polite and answer honestly. "It can be a drag, but good money. English lit till I dropped out. And Vinny's always been the same miserable he's always been, right, Pop?" I flashed him a grin at that. It was met with the sense of humor dead fish could muster. Anna laughed, though. A giggling braid that could crack any wall. "Vinny had told me so much about you.
He's glad you've finally shown some interest in the business.
Dad shot her a look, but said nothing. I wouldn't go that far. Just been driving some friends around lately. I sheepishly replied, a little red showing up on my face. Anna scuffed playfully, waving her hand in a mock fashion.
Mio Dio! Handsome and modest, such a winning combination.
I blushed and cleared my throat, trying to change the subject.
So, tell me, Madame Anna, you really got a crystal ball? I cracked.
Hey, watch your remarks, Frankie boy.
Vinny warned,
though that was met with a hoarse laugh by Anna. So quick to anger my beloved, you should watch that temper, lest it watch you.
She warned. Her eyes flickered to me.
You Americans love your ambitions about my trade, so I play into them just a tad. Poof. Now who's being modest?
Us Americans? You hearing this, Pop?
I replied. Vinny shook his head, like he had heard it 100 times before.
Madon, don't get her started. She'll go on for hours.
He lamented. I saw a fire blaze in Anna's eyes. She clucked her tongue and snapped her head back.
You boys, you play the soldatino when you've never had that boot of Rome on your neck.
She scuffed. Vinny took a swig of his white wine and chuckled darkly. I didn't mean to offend, I offered.
Just never met a effet mystic before.
I tell you, Junior, you could have cooked an egg on my forehead. I was so red.
My mother taught me so much, but she invaded the sight I was blessed with. There was a hint of sorrow in her voice. I had to leave quite suddenly. It was luck, I suppose, I met your father so soon.
She placed a hand on his thigh and flashed a smile. Our food soon arrived, carried by a plunky waiter with an obvious comb-over. He laid down a plate of shrimp scampi for my father, a steak for me, and chicken parm with noodles for the lady. It smelled divine, cooked to perfection. I heard Anna say,
"Grazie,"
to the waiter as he walked away as Vinny licked his lips. Anna dug in immediately, stacking her fork into the mound of pasta, twirling a big chunk and gulping it down in one bite. A touch of sauce dribbled down her chin as she moaned, savoring every single morsel. Vinny was about to take a bite as well when Anna suddenly pointed at him, wagging her finger like she was a schoolboy.
Noi veramiando,
she said, muffling as she chewed her food. Vinny scrunched his face, not understanding a word of what she had just said.
Don't talk with your mouth full, he began.
Don't eat that, it's veleno, poison.
She said that last part slowly, sounding each syllable out like she had just learned the word. I chewed the fat piece of meat I had rolling around in my mouth as my father turned as white as cotton from his bedsheets. The old man was trying to compose himself, eyes darting around the smashed room as the snakes he called friends partied on.
Who would frickin' gal? Here of all frickin' places!
He sputtered in a hushed voice.
The short one, Nicky something with the toupee,
Anna replied so casually, eating like nothing had happened. I was stunned by this bold admission. But I sure as shit wasn't going to take a bite of the scampi to find out myself.
He's upset you passed him over for the pretty boy.
What, Ricky? Kid's a top frickin' earner. 4 times what Nicky brings in.
Vinny grumbled. Anna simply shrugged, continuing to enjoy her meal.
Eat then. What do I care? Kneel over and vomit out your ass in this nice place.
She said with venom. Vinny stewed and mulled his options. Finally, he quietly excused himself, waving over Polly with the snap of his fingers. He whispered something in his ear, and I saw bloodlust overtake Polly as he snapped his focus to Nikki's table. He was lost in the sauce now, 2 girls on his arms as he told some foul joke. 2 men I hadn't seen before appeared behind him, grabbing him and quickly escorting him to the back. A gaggle of wise guys followed suit, assuring the other patrons that nothing was wrong and to go about their business. There was a murmur of discontent, but ultimately no one cared as they dragged the protesting little guy away. I was alone with Anna now, dwindling away, embarrassed at the sudden show of force, and in awe of the sway she seemed to have over Vinny. "You saved his life," I finally admitted, breaking the tension. "How'd you know?" I squinted at her like an idiot. She dismissed me with a wave of her hand.
"Please, huh? Little Nikki would not be the one to topple the wall."
She squared her face at me.
"You have so much hatred for that man."
"That's my father you're talking about," I said in a lower voice.
"He flaunts his adultery to your face. How could you not? A sick wife at home? Any gallivants with the younger women? I am no Saint Franklin, but he should know better."
She grimaced. "Well, you aren't exactly blameless in that," I spat, and regretted that instantly. To this day, I don't know why.
"You think me a whore? I am disappointed, but not surprised. Your father is boastful, but he doesn't act." She gave me a lingering look to think that one over. The look on my face must have looked like a toddler trying to figure out how 2 and 2 makes 5, because she let out a low giggle, clearly enjoying my befuddlement.
"So, if he ain't..."
"He wants to, but he covets my sight more. I've been his peer more for over 2 years now. You see this rise."
She lingered on that last thought. I'd always wondered what his edge was, and now she was smirking at me from across the table. "And I always thought it was some tactical genius," I murmured to myself.
"It's not a tactical to use every advantage you have against the wolves at your door?"
she countered. I didn't answer. She narrowed her eyes at me.
"You are, how to say, not the fastest horse in the race, yes?"
She laughed playfully. I cracked a smile at that. "Good thing I'm handsome then, huh?" I rose my glass and a toast. Anna met it with her own glass and the clink rang out. We chatted a little longer about her life in the old country until Vinny reappeared with a rough clearing of his throat. He was standing by Anna's side awkwardly, his knuckles coarse and bloody. His scuffs were caked in red, but he didn't seem to care.
"We should get going here. We found a rat in the kitchen. Need to clean it up a bit,"
he lied. As we were leaving, without pain, mind you, I couldn't help but notice some of Pop's goons escorting patrons out.
"Must have been one hell of a rat in the back, huh?"
The ride back to Anna's was quiet. Drove with the windows down and just let that cool breeze wash over me. When we got back, Anna leaned into the driver's seat and wrapped her arms around me. She smelt like lavender. She told me it was wonderful meeting me and hoped we could see each other again. I couldn't see Vinny's face when she did that, but I could imagine the seething it may have held. He walked her back to the door, holding her by the waist. He leaned into her ear, whispering something. Anna blushed, but pushed him back, shaking her head no. Dad gave her a peck on the cheek goodnight, and gave me one last glance before disappearing inside. Dad slammed the passenger side when he came back, clearly disgruntled. He didn't have to say shit. I started the car back up and sped off. He huffed and puffed back there, finally catching me staring at him. He forced some good cheer on his face as he leaned back.
"She's something, ain't she, Frankie? Would have told you to get lost so she... Would have told you to get lost so we could, get some coffee, but... Well, I guess she needs a break. I wear her out something fierce,"
he proclaimed boldly. I held my tongue, and the old man seemed satisfied at that.
"She seemed to take a liking to you,"
he spoke. Again, he was met with silence.
"Nah, that's good. She's good people. Just don't forget who she's friends with first."
He didn't say anything for the rest of the ride. Didn't need to. Mother effer. I stopped the recording here. He was flustered and needed a break. Frankly, I did too. I had no idea how big of an impact the life really had on him. I also had no idea he believed in so much hocus pocus crap. I'll have to drill him for more on that. I did notice something though. When Senior was talking about that Anna woman, it was his eyes. They were filled with pain. I'll update as soon as I can. Until then, I guess, beware ghosts throwing chairs.